You're listening to A Conduit's Diary. This is a podcast about me, Rachel, and my experiences as I investigate paranormal activity as a conduit. This is rated R for explicit because I do have a little bit of a foul mouth. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you listen to it. Happy May, and let's get right into episode 34, The Terror of Lake Pleasant. As April ends, true hell begins. Summer. Truthfully, my financial situation has improved enough that I could probably leave the state for something cooler, like Canada or the North Pole. Anything other than the oppressive heat that is already rearing its head. Mornings are deceptive. This morning, as I got into my car, I felt chipper. It was a cool 70 degrees with light cloud cover. Why was I even saving for a new car? I don't even need AC right now. I rolled down the windows for my drive down the surface streets, but quickly rolled them up again as I got on the freeways. Something about driving 75 miles per hour doesn't do it for my hair. This morning was a different one. I was heading north of Phoenix to Lake Pleasant. I've mentioned before that Phoenix is a sprawling metropolitan that encompasses a ridiculous amount of cities and towns that bleed together. North of Phoenix is subjective, because I was technically still in Phoenix Metro, but north of the city itself. From my home in the East Valley, it was easily an hour drive. Lake Pleasant was something I'd heard of but never been to. Lake activities weren't really my parents' MO. It was the annual trip to Disneyland, where my parents argued the whole time, which put a sour taste in their mouth for any family activity we did, and ended up doing nothing outside the home until the following year, when we went to Disneyland again. My parents' divorce was a blessing in that way, but it didn't bode well for summers on the lake. I had friends who invited me, but I quickly learned that the sun was a foe that required layers of clothes. Plus, the water in every Arizona lake was disgusting, as they were all man-made through a series of dams. One year, I went tubing down the Salt River and sliced my foot open on a beer can. That was the end of my foray into the Arizona wilderness for any sort of water-based activity. The biggest red flag for me was the name, Lake Pleasant. I've long since learned that the more appealing the euphemism, the more disgusting the truth. Lake Pleasant was no different. It looks like every other sun-bleached lake in the state. I crested the hill to look down at the lake that sprawled below me. The obviously low water line against the rocks, the remnants of last year's fires along the horizon. To one side, I saw what could only be described as a frat boy's dream, a dock with numerous slides and water ventures meant to launch you into space. There was also an inflatable obstacle course that sat empty this early in the morning. The docks were sparse and filled with small fishing boats. I assumed the partygoers would come on the weekends and later in the morning. I parked at one of the parking lots near the marina, bypassing large RVs parked in desert lots with no shade. The marina was equally losing its battle against the sun, muted paint flaking off the boats, the names peeling and cracked down the off-white shells. The green water was opaque and littered with algae as I made my way across the docks, checking my phone against the names on the side of the boats. It was impossible. The boats were different sizes and shapes, some with their names proudly displayed, others with just an assortment of numbers and letters like a license plate. The boat in question was called Cryptic Cruiser, and it looked like something out of a movie. Jordan stood on the deck wearing boat shoes that were probably older than the lake, shorts that ended precariously high up his tan thigh, and a Hawaiian shirt that was fully unbuttoned. He wore a captain's hat that was perched on his head in an ironic fashion, barely hiding his light brown hair underneath. His face was leathery from the sun and placed him somewhere between the ages of 35 and ageless. When he whipped off his sunglasses, I was shocked to see white, pale skin around his hazel eyes, which were wrinkled at the edges as he grinned. "Rachel, ahoy!" he called. I looked around the empty dock before approaching the side of the boat. "You must be Jordan," I said. He gave a little bow and reached a hand over to pull me onto the deck, which rocked gently at the movement. "I am indeed. I've been looking forward to your visit. I've been trying to tell anyone that can listen to this story. It'll shock your pants off." He chuckled and shook his head, heading across the short dock to open a door and descend into the boat. I followed behind, surprised to feel a blast of cool air and see a spacious living area. There was a small fridge, a loft bed, a bathroom, and a living quarters that seemed entirely normal for a bachelor. I felt the cool air of an AC unit blow across my loose bangs. It smelled like fish and dirt, but I guess it could have been worse. "Sit, sit," he cried, motioning to the table he'd assembled in the middle of the area. It was a fold-out table that attached to the wall and had two equally unstable chairs pulled around it. He sat at one and folded his hands in front of him, his smile wide. He discarded his captain's hat, and his light brown hair was mussed and sticking up all sorts of ways. I hesitantly sat across from him, my back to the entrance. "Like the bachelor pad?" he asked, waving his arms around. "Is that what it is?" I questioned, glancing around again. "Kids are in college this year. Wife and I decided there's no reason to be together anymore. We're more like roommates anyway. And I've had a soul that needed the sea." "Isn't this a lake?" I asked. He shrugged. "Baby steps. Today it's Lake Pleasant. Tomorrow it's open waters." He moved his hand in a wave-like motion as though to show his progression through the waters of life. "Sorry about your divorce," I offered. He shrugged. "It is what it is. Wife didn't want the boat, so it was easy negotiating. Anyway, I'm glad you came. I've been trying to tell anyone who will listen about this story, and I got nothing. I'm worried we're just seeing the start of the phenomenon, only a matter of time before it gets worse." I raised my eyebrows. Jordan's email was vague. It was written like someone who used just their index fingers to type on a keyboard, with a lot of ellipses and exclamation points. To be honest, I just read the subject line, which boasted the exact amount he'd pay to have someone listen to his story, and breezed through the rest. Something about monsters. But weren't all ghost monsters to those who didn't know otherwise? "Do you know how old this lake is?" he asked, leaning back in his chair. I shook my head. "Nearly 100 years old. It was built in 1927. It was smaller then. It's grown over the years. But this lake is nearly a century old. A lot of history in it, you know? We don't think of Arizona as being that old of a state, but imagine what was here before the dam was built. Entire civilizations. You can see the evidence of it all around." He was animated and, admittedly, a good storyteller. "Of course, people forget that before it was Arizona or Lake Pleasant, it was home to many, many people. So why is it so hard to believe that there's nothing more than water on this land? Why can't people grasp that maybe something existed and the dams were built to bury it?" "Come again?" I asked. He snapped his fingers. "Exactly. Whose bright idea was it to make all these man-made lakes in the middle of a damn desert?" "I thought it was a way to store water," I said lamely. I was regretting my public Arizona school education, where we'd been taught abstinence-only education and that the Pilgrims and Indians got along. I was now questioning everything I knew about the history of the state, down to the purpose of the dams. It did seem strange to divert the natural flow of water into larger bodies of water, but it also seemed unnatural to live in the middle of the desert. And here we are. "Perfect cover," he said, nodding his head. "Phoenix gets busy, people move here. We need water. We need those damn golf courses." He said golf courses with such venom, I wondered if one had personally spited him. "It's a great cover to keep our heads buried in the sand. So what if we utilized it for power or storage? Doesn't mean that's why we made it or why we keep filling it up, even though there's nothing left to give. You've seen the marks. The water level is down catastrophically. Why not just kick us all off the lake and turn it into a real water source?"
"Why do you think they made the lakes?" I asked.
"To bury something ancient and evil," he said, leaning forward and stippling his fingers in front of him. The light from the overhead cabin cast a shadow across his face that only added to the weight of his words.
"What kind of evil?" I asked.
"Ugh, don't tell me you're one of them," he said, shaking his head.
"One of who?" I asked, thoroughly lost.
"Oh, you know, one of those people who don't think there's evil in the world, that we just need to coddle and love things for them to be good and well."
I shook my head. No, I think there's evil in the world. I thought back to the ever-growing shadow demon that collected the souls and the long-toothed beast that attached itself to a successful woman's shoulder. I'd seen evil.
"So you think someone tried to bury one under a lake?" I asked.
He nodded. "Drown it, most likely." "So you think it's a physical evil?" I asked. He smiled at that, nodding.
"Yeah, I suppose I do. it manifests physically, I have no reason to think it does anything else. Anything else? I asked. I felt like I was talking to a drunk uncle who was trying to convince me that lizard people ruled the world. I was trying to decide the best way to go about this. Try to reason with the crazy, or meet the crazy with more crazy. I decided to tiptoe the boundary between the two approaches. You know, there's the physical manifestation of evil, and then the spiritual. Possession by demons, the like. Ah, yes. This may not be something to reason with. But aren't demons physical, I countered? He wagged his finger at me. Yes, but they can cause disease that isn't physical. You deal with ghosts, right? They are physical to you, but not to me. The evil I'm talking about has a body and shape and breathes. That caught my attention. Breathes? I asked. He nodded. That's how I found out about it. I've been collecting its children, its eggs, its offspring, the amoebas, whatever they may be. I'm no biologist. I don't know how to classify where they fit on the food chain. I'm telling you, though, they've got to be pretty high up. I'd suspect more people would go missing in this lake if they were big enough to want humans. But when it comes to wildlife, well, he trailed off and shook his head. Let's just say there aren't a lot of cats around here. That did surprise me. There was no invasive species as hardy as a cat. Places like this where people were prone to leaving out food were havens for stray cats to live and thrive. No cats, really, I pressed. He nodded. Dogs seem to do okay. They don't see many small dogs get too far out of their owner's sight. They train them with litter boxes. It's demeaning, to be honest. He shook his head. So, as I was saying, I think the lake was built to hide a great evil. Maybe 100 years ago, it was big enough to be a problem, or we didn't have the technology to destroy it. I don't know. They thought, for whatever reason, if they flooded this basin and made this lake, that would be the end of it. My theory is they're very solitary creatures, and that's why they made it into a habitable lake. All this noise and partying is sure to scare them off. I bet they figured if it survived the flood, it would head through the waterways out to sea, or at least to Nevada, where it'd be, you know, their problem. Kick the can down the road, so to speak. So it was a problem then, but not now, I asked, resisting the urge to ask how old guns were. I'm fairly certain we have the type of instrument that could kill a cat eating physical manifestation of evil, and they were easier to use and more practical than building a dam in a desert. Probably money-related. They needed to make Arizona tempting for settlement. Can't have anything that would put even a slightly sour taste into the mouth of its settlers. You know, most people came here looking for gold and found copper. This very area was home to plenty of prospectors. Not a lot of yield, but a lot of heart. Suppose they came here and found some gold, and suppose they encountered the cryptid in the meantime. That'll scare away your rare settlers, your upstarts. They'll pack up and head out to California, where they can live free and mine for real gold. Cryptid, like Bigfoot, I pressed. He nodded, slapping his hands on the table. The very same. But no, I don't think like Bigfoot exactly. But in the same wheelhouse. Government experiment that escaped, perhaps a hybrid between two other species, other cryptids. This area is known for the chupacabra and the jackalope, you know. Both are very well-known phenomenon. What if one crossed with a local coyote? The possibilities are endless. I'm sure a good biologist or zoologist or Steve Irwin type would have a field day with my collection. So is it like a land water creature or... I asked, growing tired of 20 questions. For everything he answered, he opened the door to countless other responses and possibilities. It was making my head swim. I think it was land, but now it's seafaring. Maybe it's mixed as DNA, or maybe it's the original, but it outsmarted the man. It's got to be careful, otherwise the government will come for it against like it did before. This lake's too profitable in the summer, but come winter, mark my words, they'll have some algae bloom or other such sort of nonsense to kick us off the lake so they can exterminate it once and for all. You said you had a collection, I asked. He raised his hands. Whoa there, we're not there yet. I gotta tell you how I discovered it. Do you know what a blorbo is? He asked. I shook my head. It's an unidentified sea creature. It's like a UFO of the ocean. Whenever something mysterious washes ashore, they always got to quarantine it off, you know, biohazard or whatever. They make a big show of scooping it up and releasing an official statement that it was just a bloated kangaroo or other such nonsense. Most of the time, these are truly cryptids, unidentified sea creatures with no DNA common with the known world. They take their bodies, they test them to see where they may fit in the metaphorical food chain. You know how crocodiles and cockroaches are really dinosaurs? Some of these things predate dinosaurs, and they're just washing up casually before being swept away by the governments that be. I was officially lost at this point, but Jordan didn't give much room for argument or interjections. He plowed ahead animatedly, his arms waving wildly as he spoke. I saw myself, right here. Jim, next door. He hooked his thumb over his shoulder to motion to a nearby boat. He was out one morning, walking his dog. German Shepherd, beautiful girl, absolute asshole. They gotta walk early because she's a child eater. Anyway, he was along the shore where people swim when he saw something moving. He swore up and down it was some mermaid being. It was the size of his arm, he said, with the tail of a fish and the upper part of a cat or some other land creature. He said it was gasping for air for a bit before it died. His dog tried to eat it, but he told her off. He took a picture with his iPhone, sent it to the staff at the marina, who called the game and fish guys. Let me tell you, I've been on this lake a bit. I know what game and fish guys look like, and these were not them. No mud on their boots, brand new boots. They scooped it up and said it was some water snake or something, invasive species. Shut the beach down for the day. I asked Jim to show me the picture, and guess what? It was gone from his phone. Deleted. That's why I don't use those smartphones. They're direct line to your FBI agent. They knew he had a picture of that blurbo and deleted it right off his phone. Opened the beach the next day and heard nothing else about it. Never seen those same game and fish guys since. Wow, I said, because that's truly all I could say. While I may help run a rescue, I wasn't versed in anything scientific. My bachelor's was a Bachelor of Arts, and I'd never used it. I employed veterinarians at the rescue, and other than knowing that the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell, my science was all forgotten. Could it be possible there were entire gaps in our understanding of species? How do you know it's not mutations? I asked. He regarded me like I just shot him. The amount of toxins in these waters, beer, urine, boat fuel, how do you know they're not just fish that have mutated? He chapped his chin, nodding. That's a good theory, a great theory even, but it doesn't explain why there's so many of them. What do you mean, so many of them? I asked. Well, a mutation is one time, right? One point in the chain. Maybe they pass the trait on, maybe they die from it because it's not compatible with life or makes them infertile. To say they all mutated the exact same way at the exact same time, well, it seems impossible. Sorry, sweetheart. He said with such condescension, I almost kicked him and left. I have seen, well, nearly hundreds of these things. Hundreds? I asked. He held up a hand. So Jim tries to show me this picture and it's erased from his phone. I watched my binoculars. They had divers out all night in that area of the beach. They kept coming out of the water with crates of stuff, like they were packing things up. All night I watched them dive with no light and bring stuff up out of the lake into their cars and drive away. They were clearing it out. It was months before I saw another one. It's always early in the morning. The first one I saw was so small, I would have mistaken it for a minnow. But on closer inspection, I saw it. Half fish, half cat thing, the size of a finger. I scooped it down, collected it in a water bottle, and took it back here. I wasn't sure what to do. Should I dissect it? Experiment on it? I took it apart and it was like no fish I'd ever seen. The tail was like a fish, but the front, it had bones like cats in its arms and teeth like cats too, razors. I YouTubed a bunch of videos on cat anatomy and dissection videos. It was truly half cat, half fish. Then I found some more, older ones. I think they're hatching and they either live or die. You know how it is in the wilds. These ones were dying out and I'd find them and take them back here and get more information as they got bigger. I found they're not all exactly the same. Some have lungs like a fish, others like a cat. I think that's why they can't survive, because they're not fully fish and not fully cat. So I started talking, started asking others. You ever seen anything weird out here? Just try and keep it casual. I was worried the game and fish decoys would come back and put me in their armored vans and send me off to Gitmo or something. A man could disappear on this lake, that's for sure. But I got louder and no one came. and that's when I decided the world needed to know. I got my stuff together and brought it to the local news station. They wrote it off as a fraud. While I was gone, my boat was ransacked. No money or anything missing, just my specimens. They're in cahoots with the local news and everything. But I didn't let it stop there. I've been telling everyone I can. If they silence me, so be it. But I got a few believers now. And with your help, I can spread the word even further. There's an unnatural species that the government tried to stamp out, but has found its way right here in our man-made lake. At long last, Jordan came up for air. He leaned back in his chair, fingers clasped behind his head, nodding his affirmation. "Why are they evil?" I asked. He raised an eyebrow. "You asking me why the government is evil?" he tisked. I shook my head. "No, at the start you said these things were evil, that it was some evil mid-level food chain creature that needed to be stomped out. It sounds like they're just, I don't know, hybrids, not compatible with life." He smiled slowly then, leaning forward. "All I've seen are the babies. What do you think Mama looks like? What do you think Daddy looks like?" His eyes narrowed as he spoke, posing the real questions. "We wipe out species all day and are public about it. They got horns we need or a forest we want to build a skyscraper in. Why hide this one species? What's to gain by eradicating it while being ever so quiet? You know it's not valuable. If it shat jewels, this would be an off-limits habitat. Instead, it's Springbreaker's paradise. They want it gone for some reason, and they're not keen on the world knowing about it." "You're skeptical." "So was I." "Just you wait, though." He stood then and turned to the kitchenette behind him. He rummaged through a freezer and gingerly lifted a long wooden plank from its depths. He turned towards me and set it down on the table in front of us with reverence. It took a full 30 seconds for me to understand what I was seeing. There were three of them, each various sized. The smallest was the size of a finger and, if I didn't look closely, would have written it off as an odd fish. It was only after I looked at the other two that I jerked back to the first. The other two were larger, one the size of my hand, the other my forearm. They had tails like a fish, muted gray and scaled, that were fastened to the board with pins. At the waist, the scales flattened abruptly, climbing up the torso and shifting gradually to fur. The fur came in tufts from between the scales. It was like the fur of an otter, flat, prickly, with a sheen of oil on it. Two legs protruded from the chest, stubby, webbed legs with claws at the end of five long fingers. The chest tapered to a head which ended in sightless yellow-green eyes, slit like a cat's. The ears were flat against its head, its mouth was open in a silent growl, and rows of sharp, feline teeth glimmered in the mouth. A single dorsal fin ran down the length of its body from the top of its head to the middle of its tail. My shocked eyes darted up to Jordan's wide smile. "Behold," he said. "I call them Felphibia, cat amphibians. They're the terror of Lake Pleasant."
A Conduit's Diary is created by me, written and produced by me, mixed horribly and edited by me. Cover art created by BMC Design on Fiverr. Music, intro and outro, created by Chris Hornberger.